First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz. We'll start you with the headlines you need to know. The Patriots have new jerseys. It's like every week we get to talk about new jerseys of some sort. Well, the Patriots have new-ish jerseys. The Patriots unveiled their new jerseys Monday morning. They kind of look familiar because they're the Color Rush alternates the team has recently donned. They've now been promoted to their full-time jerseys. It's the first change to the Patriots' primary uniforms in 20 years at this point. So they get a little Color Rush. They decide they like it. They stick with it. They make it the jersey moving forward. Next up in the headlines you need to know, Coco Gauff had obviously been in the news as it was reported that she had been struggling with the pressures of her meteoric rise. However, Corey Gauff, the father and coach of the teenage tennis phenom, has gone on the record writing for Behind the Racket that the 16-year-old said she had a dark mindset before Wimbledon last year but was never diagnosed with any sort of depression. So some of that speculation put to rest. And lastly, on the headlines that you need to know, trades everywhere or not. The Bucks not expected to trade for Leonard Fournette. The Jags running back may or may not be out on the open market at this point. There had been speculation that there was talk with the Bucks. The Bucks not going to make that happen. But in the world of other trades, the 49ers are open to trading their first round picks in the NFL draft. Not just picks. They hold number 13 and 31 overall. They're fielding trade calls about both of those first round NFL draft picks, open to dealing either or both of their selections, league sources have told ESPN's Adam Schefter. So we hear more and more that teams that might be on the clock Thursday night when the NFL draft begins may not be on the clock because it feels like a lot of teams are at least interested in hearing what's out there. Wouldn't be surprised to see some of that being floated just to try and get trade conversations working in advance of what will be an interesting looking NFL draft. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're by Progressive Insurance. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. We're going to get you involved in the conversation. The whole world was watching. I was just irregularly excited, like at an irrational level last night for The Last Dance. Obviously, we're going to get into some NFL draft today. We're only a few days away. But the social conscience of the entire sports community is all over The Last Dance. We knew it was going to be revealed last night. We got episodes 1 and 2, even with the naughty language on ESPN, I might add there. But we got the real beginnings to the look behind the scenes we were all anxious for. As the Last Dance started, taking a look at the Last Dance, the last season of the Bulls dynasty, but also tying it back into everything that got them to where they were. I want your reactions. What'd you think? We were all tweeting about it in the moment. Everybody was watching it. The good, the bad. What surprised you? What really stunned you? What did you learn? What were your reactions and takeaways from the Last Dance? Give me your take on the Last Dance by calling 888-SAY-ESPN 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on it. We're going to take your take on The Last Dance. 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. And let's start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G for just $45 a month. Saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. And the Straight Talk comes in the form of really the main character or the main narration of the second episode of The Last Dance last night, which was featured largely, focused largely on Scottie Pippen. Now, I'll admit that maybe it's a fault to my wiring. I seem to like the other guy, and I tweeted this last night. I always preferred, and I grew up a Lakers fan, but you didn't grow up my age, 42, almost 43, and not watch everything about the Bulls, right? And as I was watching it, I gravitated to Scottie. Yeah, we all know Michael Jordan's a better player, but I gravitated towards Scottie. Scottie was my guy. Like, I gravitated as a UNLV fan growing up. I preferred Stacey Augmond to Larry Johnson. I liked Marty Jannetty more than Shawn Michaels. I like Slash more than Axl Rose. Richie Sambora over John Bon Jovi. Like, I'm the other guy. So I was all in on Scottie Pippen last night. And so much was revealed about Scottie and where he was at this time with The Last Dance. Now, I'll give you a little bit of context from my mind, but I want you to hear what First Take had to say as they broke down whether or not they felt bad for Scottie Pippen after watching last night's episode. Mike Greenberg joined Max and Stephen A. to talk all things Pippen and The Last Dance.
Jerry Reinsdorf, I'm not going to let him off the hook. And the reason why I'm not going to let Jerry Reinsdorf off the hook is that he's the boss. It was him that worked out the 1 year, $6 million deal for Phil Jackson to come for that last season or what have you. He was Jerry Krause's boss. You know what? There are exceptions. We understand Scottie Pippen signed a contract. He was under contract. You could have found a way to take care of Scottie Pippen better than that. In other words, we negotiate the deal, and after that, I don't want to hear it. And to be so dogged, so hardcore, there are options to every rule. And if ever there was an exception, it was Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and the Bulls. It was just unfortunate that both Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause had to be so dogged their approach to things the way that they were. Scottie didn't help that last year because Michael was right. He was selfish. There is no question about that. And that sort of takes the shine off of the good that he can be portrayed as in this particular situation. But Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause were the culprits in all of this because they did not have to disband it the way that they did. And they chose to anyway, just because of their principles in terms of how they do things. It was really sad to see that.
Max?
Molly, to answer your question, yes, I feel sorry for Scottie Pippen. He was obviously, when Jordan retired for those 2 years, the second best player in the game to Olajuwon. He was clearly the second best player in the game. So, you know, when Jordan comes back, he's what, the third best player in the game? You're a top three player. Even people who want to wrongly argue he's only top five or something like that, but you're paid outside the top 100. Yes, the team got a great deal on him. He signed that deal as a documentary, which, by the way, is, I mean, like, you know, it's the old Eddie Murphy line. If you throw a starving guy a cracker, oh, my God, is this a Ritz? But what if you throw a starving guy a filet mignon? Because that's what we've done here. Like, I know, look, this is an ESPN production, and here we are on ESPN. But, oh, my God, just as a basketball fan, I was going nuts last night. Especially you have, like, LL and Rakim as the backdrop, the soundtrack over Jordan. It was insane. But anyway, as the documentary made clear, Scottie grew up in real poverty. So real poverty, even by people whose standards are, well, I understand this is poverty. No, this was real poverty and hardship Scottie Pippen grew up in. So when he signs a $17 million long-term deal, okay, we get it. He's trading some upside for financial security, given his background. You understand why he did it. And the team is like, okay, we got a team-friendly deal. Tough luck. However, there are extenuating circumstances. When a guy proves he's an MVP caliber player, but he's paid like an also-ran. And by the way, his contract is coming up. You know, like, it's not like they needed it for salary cap relief. The Bulls weren't attracting any major free agents. It was just Jordan and Pippen and Kukoc. And by that time, Kukoc and Robin, they had to pay. But those guys were, you know, it's a soft cap. You can escalate their contracts under the cap because they're already on the team. So the fact that they didn't pay Pippen was to play him cheap. I feel bad for him. It should have never gotten to that. When the star is cursing out the GM on the team bus and the team isn't doing anything about it because Pippen had leverage, you don't want to break that up, especially that year. Then there's something wrong. Something has to be done to remedy it. And instead of looking to trade him or otherwise have him chafe under the bad contract, just extend it for a couple of years, tear up the deal, and give him a new one. Jordan was going to get $30 million the next year, and Pippen's on 2-point-something. Come on.
It's just sort of the way the timing worked out with it, though, guys. I mean, I was there, and I can tell you a couple of things about it. Jerry Reinsdorf said to Scottie Pippen when he was signing the deal, don't sign this. This is not a good contract for you. You don't want to do this. But Scottie Pippen had a significant – he didn't just have a back story. He also had a back injury. And he was very concerned that it would limit him and that he would actually wind up having a very short career. People forget that he had a serious back injury and there was significant concern that he would wind up not being able to play anymore. And Jerry Reinsdorf said, if we sign this deal, if you get hurt, I still have to pay you all of this money, which was $18 million. If you outperform it, do not come back to me.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. And look, to me, some of this is everybody can be right and wrong in all of it. It was obviously, and Mike Greenberg pointed out really smartly this morning that some of the back injury issues for Scottie Pippen really motivated somebody that came from nothing to sign a deal that may not have been the smartest, but he wanted to guarantee his future, knowing that, frankly, he may not have the longest playing career. That can make a ton of sense. At the time that he signed a 7-year, $18 million deal, it's also fair to say that the Bulls had no idea they were about to achieve the level of dynasty that they did, in fact, achieve. Now, Scottie ended up doing okay. I mean, let's not get it twisted. He made over $109 million in his career. So obviously things went well. Like, you know, obviously it worked itself out. But if you're the Bulls as an organization, at some point you're looking at this level of dynastic performance. I think it's also fair to look at the Bulls and say, why not reward the players that are doing it just to keep the group together? I think that's one of the stunning things that we really learned through the process is that the Bulls had no care or concern about trying to keep any level of community around this team as they were trying to accomplish these great things. That was what was really stunning. The other part of this that I have to remind everybody is if you watch this at the time, all of this was very public. Scottie Pippen's contractual issues, the fact that he waited to get the surgery done, the fact that it was the last dance, that Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause had no love lost. Like, these were all well-documented and well-covered things. It was just a different era of media at the time. So we don't obsess about it, and we don't remember it the same way because, frankly, things weren't covered the way they are in a social media world. So that's what the last dance is really going to offer us, I think, is some element to peek behind the curtain at some of the things that we remembered but have forgotten and get more detail on it for people that lived it, but also to give first detail on it for people that may never have even realized it was going on. Don't forget, tune into The Last Dance. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the entire Bulls dynasty. The 10-part series already began last night. You can listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast presented by State Farm, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. The numbers on that were huge for the guys last night, too, so congrats to them. I want your reaction on it. We'll take some of your reaction in just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in to give us your Last Dance reaction. Before we get your Last Dance reaction, though, I want to get a little bit of reaction from Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman, obviously, was a huge part and will be a huge part of this series. But he joined First Take to talk to specifically about his dealings with Jerry Krause and the Bulls front office and the team dynamics of the dynasty that we watched last night.
I never got involved with the front office at all. You know, when Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, and Michael Jordan asked me to come to Jerry Krause's house and asked me, did I want to join the Chicago Bulls? And I said, I don't give a damn, pretty much. You know, and I think it was something in the sense where I think we talked about this a long time ago where, I had to go say, I had to go apologize to Scottie, which it was right or wrong. But pretty much after that all happened, the team formed with me and Michael Scottie and MJ. So I think that Jerry Krause, you know, I was there those 3 years. And wow, it was something, Molly. It was something. I never heard anything like that. I never seen nothing like that before. And I never really got into the politics of it. But I guess I never asked Mike or Scottie, what is the reason why you guys are so bitter towards the management? I never asked those guys that. But after a couple of years, I figured it out where they all came from. Because I guess it came from Scottie. And then I think it really hit the head right there with Phil Jackson when Jerry Krause said he didn't care. We won 82 games. You are not coming back. And I think that hurt Phil Jackson more than anything in the world. And I think that hurt Scottie. That hurt Michael. For me, I was just more there for the ride. Pretty much, I wanted to win championship with these guys, and I would go to war with these guys any time of the day. And it was just sad the fact that we could have came back and won a fourth championship very easily.
In light of what we're seeing on the documentary in terms of how Scottie had delayed his surgery and all of that stuff, there's a lot of people that's looking at that right now. And even Michael Jordan was on the record saying that, you know, he was selfish. Is that the way the rest of y'all viewed Scottie Pippen that last year?
Well, Steve, you can take that one or two ways, because when I came to Chicago Bulls, people didn't know what to expect from me. You know, I'm coming in, you know, kind of hot, you know, because San Antonio just got rid of me for pretty much for nobody. We're Purdue straight up. And I'm like, what the hell is this all about? So they said, Dennis, you're going to Chicago. I said, okay, that's cool. And next thing you know, when I got there, Scottie, you know, I don't know what the tension was between him and the management, because I never asked for that information. But I think it was just more where Scottie was unappreciated, because if you notice by Scottie Pippen, when Michael Jordan left in 93 or 94, 95, Scottie Pippen was the best player in the world. if people didn't know that, he led the whole, he led the team in every category. Every category.
Yep.
Scottie got his wings in 1991 when they beat Detroit Pistons. He got his wings then. And he started on that trend from winning three championships. When Michael left, Scottie took over. And next thing you know, he was the best player in the world. And people don't know that.
Yeah, I thought he was second best to Hakeem when Jordan left, but point well taken, Dennis. Let me ask you about you and your kind of experience on that Bulls dynasty, because I think when they got you is when they it just became ridiculous. Like, even Horace Grant was a tremendous player, but in the first three, but with you it got ridiculous. You made, I remember the quote back then, you could tell me if this is accurate. You said, when I was with Detroit, we won championships, I averaged 17 boards, I made $800,000 a year. Now, with the Bulls, dye my hair pink or whatever color it was, same 17 boards, winning championships, $8 million a year. What was that like being a part of, as it was described in the documentary, the Beatles?
Well, I was the leading catalyst for that one. You know, I would go to the hotel and stuff like that. It was like hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands of people waiting for us outside. And I was like more like Jimi Hendrix. I was that guy's out there. I was a wild child, man. I was out there doing my thing, you know, go to a hotel, put my bags in the room, go to a restaurant, go to a club. I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, hang out all night and then go to the next day, have a game. But I think it was just so cool to be with the Chicago Bulls, man, because Phil Jackson was, I mean, he was just like, to me, I call Chuck Day God. I called Phil Jackson Moses. And those guys really took me in and said, Dennis, you know what? We understand what you're going through. We understand your game. And Michael said, hey, that was a final piece to the puzzle. And the one thing on the documentary that you saw with Michael Jordan, if you saw Michael Jordan talk about people on that team, especially Scottie Pippen, he talked so highly of Scottie Pippen, so highly of him. It was almost, he almost got in tears talking about Scottie Pippen. But if you saw when the reporters start asking Michael about Scottie Pippen, Michael got perturbed. If you didn't see that, he got perturbed. He said, why don't you go ask Scottie? But if you let Michael talk about people, he will praise you all day long. But if you come at Michael Jordan and start asking questions about somebody without talking about him, it's a different Michael Jordan, which I love Michael Jordan. But it's like, if you're going to see me next week on part three, probably 95% of the time, and it's going to be amazing that I ran my own beat. I didn't live in Mike and Scottie's shadow. I was there to go there, to, rebound, win championships. To win championships, I did my thing off the court. I never talked to Mike and Scottie. I never did talk to Mike and Scottie. Even Steve Kerr said that yesterday. He said, wow, Dennis never talked to no one. I didn't. And then when we go out to restaurants, the same restaurant, we would actually create a triangle. We would not even talk to each other in a restaurant. The only time we even communicate is in a game. So it's like, wow. So next week, you'll see part three. You're going to see Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan documentary. All about that, what I did in Chicago.
That's our Last Dance recap brought to you by AT&T. And that's one of the most exciting things about this series is that, come on, we're two episodes in. We've gotten a peek behind the front office. We've gotten a peek behind Scottie Pippen. You know we're going to get more education about Rodman. We're going to get more on Phil Jackson. We're going to get more on Michael, of course. So that's why this is so incredible for so many. I want your take. What's your reaction to Last Dance episodes 1 and 2? 888-SAY-ESPN 888-729-3776. Let's go to Mitchell in Cincinnati. Mitchell, what you got? What's your reaction to the Last Dance?
Hey, man. Fitz, how are we doing?
Doing great, man. How are you? Give me your reaction. What's up?
I'm doing well. Well, my number one reaction, obviously, I'm 23, not really keeping track of the Bulls dynasty as I should because of how good they were. But the one stats where we got Pippen at 2, 2, 2, what was it, points, rebounds, something else, and then 1, 1, 1, and it shows his salary on that, definitely just struck me as the best number two of all time, as they explained.
Oh, yeah. And thanks for your take on it. You know, I think it was said today on First Take, too, and I'll give Max some credit for it. I think he said when Jordan left the league, Pippen was the second best player in the NBA at that point behind Olajuwon. And, you know, so we just forget about it. Not only was he the best number, he was only the best number two because he was on a team where, I don't know, they had Michael, you know, and so obviously that helps him. But it's interesting. Mike in Atlanta, what's your take? What was your reaction?
Hey, how do you let Scottie Pippen? I know you couldn't foresee the future, but you don't let nobody sign no contract like that and have no renegotiation clause in it. That's basically what happened, you know.
I mean, and think about, Mike, thanks for your call on it. Think about just in general today's NBA culture. Like, we are so used to now a player coming in and saying, no, I'm not going to play for that. No, I'm not going to play for you. And it's just become part of life. But at that time, it was never done that way. So when Scottie's having this really public debate, you know, and this public argument with the front office, I mean, I think we at this point understand the position of Scottie more because we're so used to at this point watching NBA players stand up and say, I won't stand for that. I want to get more your take on the Last Dance. I want your reaction to it. Episodes 1 and 2, 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. That's how you can get in. Give us your take, your reaction to The Last Dance. We're going to keep breaking down The Last Dance, but we're also only days away from the NFL draft. So we got to get a little bit of that in. It's coming up this week. The NFL draft is Thursday. First Takes Draft Blitz today took a look at one of the most important teams of the NFC and what they'll do in the draft. You'll hear that next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're brought to you by My Computer, Career Training for a Better Life, presented by Progressive Insurance. You guys get to chime in. We're taking your take on The Last Dance. I want your reaction to The Last Dance. We got episodes 1 and 2. Everybody's enamored with it. Obviously, as we took a look at episodes 1 and 2, we got a little peek behind the scenes right away on Jerry Krause, who was running the Bulls organization, and some of the issues that the players had with the front office, and you know, some cringeworthy moments as the Stars essentially belittled Krause at every opportunity. But Krause then seemingly turned around and let his ego get in the way of so much. That was just a peek behind it. Episode 2 gave us so much of the behind the scenes of Scottie Pippen. Dennis Rodman was on with First Take today and revealed that we're going to see more of Rodman in episode 3. So I want your reaction to it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get back to your reaction, though, we do want to get in a little bit of draft talk here. Obviously, the First Take guys and the team have been taking a look at different draft teams looking forward, as their Draft Blitz segment has given us a peek behind the curtain at what they're expecting from different teams. Today's team that they took a look at, one of the ones that we can't talk enough about, the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, the Eagles are in a really interesting spot in the draft because where they're picking, really, it's going to divide sort of their opportunity to get another weapon. Are they going to be able to get one of the top wide receivers? What do they want for Carson Wentz? When the guys took a look at the Eagles, particularly, the question was, do the Eagles owe Carson Wentz any new players in order for him to be successful? Max and Stephen A. talked about that today.
They don't owe it to Carson Wentz. They gave him one of the biggest contracts in football so that he could help carry that offense. The great quarterbacks like Donovan McNabb, even in years where they don't have stuff, can get you to the playoffs and usually advance. It's not what Carson Wentz did last year. Helped get them to the playoffs in the weakest division maybe in the history of football, by the way. And everyone he beat down the stretch, when everyone was lauding how great he was down the stretch, every team he beat, another NFC East quarterback looked better in that, in right around then, against that same team. And these were rookies like Daniel Jones who were looking better than Carson Wentz against those same teams. Terrible teams, by the way. Carson Wentz has the ability to be an MVP. He's shown it in flashes, but was way too inconsistent last year. Should they draft a wideout? Sure, it'd be a good idea, even though injury was really the problem last year. But DeSean Jackson, you know, can play, obviously. He's, you know, very motivated for 2020. Alshon Jeffrey, maybe he'll be traded, maybe not. Maybe they'll draft a receiver. Stephen A. probably is a good idea. Why not? But this is a team that, if healthy, is kind of loaded and paid the quarterback a whole lot of money to get it done. It's on Carson Wentz to get it done. The team doesn't owe him a wideout.
I completely disagree with you. First of all, pay attention to the sport that we're talking about here. It's not like basketball where even though you still need a team, no matter what sport you're playing in a team sport, you can take the ball and say, move the hell out the way. Give it to me. I'll take you there. Quarterback can't do that. You got to throw the ball. Somebody's got to run the routes and catch the ball. And that has to be your receiver or your tight end. When you bring up Donovan McNabb, I'll remind you that in 2004 when they went to the Super Bowl, who was his receiver? That would happen to be Terrell Owens. Now, he wasn't available for the playoffs because he got injured near the end of the regular season, but he was playing lights out during that regular season. Well, what ultimately propelled them to the Super Bowl? They had guys that were relative no-names like the Todd Pinkstons of the world, Freddie Mitchells, the L.J. Smiths of the world, Chad Lewis's of the world. I get all of that. But them brothers had been playing with Donovan McNabb. There was a cohesiveness, a cohesion, a togetherness that they had. They were familiar with one another, so they were able to overcome it. Also helped along by an elite defense led by Jimmy Johnson as your defensive coordinator, who was blitzing all day, every day, and just wreaking havoc throughout the National Football Conference. In the end, however, it still came down when you looked at the Philadelphia Eagles. What really, really propelled them because of the regular season that they had was the acquisition of Terrell Owens. We can't ignore that. If you're Carson Wentz right now, DeSean Jackson was hurt last year. You got to get him healthy. Obviously, Nelson Aguilar is gone. You're looking at them. They desperately need a receiver. I definitely think they needed to buffer their defense, but they did that in their secondary, which was ranked 19th against the pass by acquiring Darius Slay, more so than Nickell Roby-Coleman. I'm thinking about Darius Slay and what he can bring to the table, and I think that's going to be an upgrade compared to what they had last year. But ultimately now it's about Carson Wentz having receivers. They dropped passes. Dan Orlovsky was on the show with us, Max, last season, and he highlighted at least 3 to 4 games that the Eagles lost because of dropped passes at key pivotal moments. We can't ignore that. We got to pay attention to that. Carson Wentz can do a lot of things like a lot of NFL quarterbacks can do. What you cannot do is throw the football to yourself and catch your own passes. Somebody's got to do that for you, and the Eagles got to help them out in that regard.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, and yes, obviously, I mean, I think we can all look at the wide receiver position, but we can also take a look at it and say, hey, if there's anybody right now that has the opportunity to trade down, I mean, there's several teams I think are going to do that, but the Eagles will have the opportunity to get wide receivers wherever they really want. This is such a deep wide receiver draft. They'll be able to get that need filled really whenever they need to. So I look at the Eagles as a team that will address weapons and they will find weapons for Carson Wentz, but let's see where it goes. By the way, shameless self-promotion here. I do believe that Mina Kimes, myself, Mike Olick Jr., Field Yates, we're going to be coming back with some more draft coverage for you this year. We're still working out some of the details on the hows and whys and where. I believe you're going to be able to find some of that content in the ESPN app and Twitter and YouTube, all those places. We're still working out details, but we'll find a way to get you in the loop. If you missed it last year, one of the proudest things I think we've done and one of the most fun things we've done was covering the draft as a group. So that coverage will come back. We're still just working out what it looks like. In the meantime, First Take, your take. We're getting your reaction to The Last Dance episodes 1 and 2. What'd you think? What stood out to you? Jared in Pennsylvania, what did you got? What's your Last Dance reaction?
Man, I think just the fact that, you know, kids my age who are 20, 21, 22, never really saw Michael play, never really lived through it or getting like this insight about it. Another thing though, I mean, we're getting this whole insight on Jerry Krause. I saw a tweet today say it was Mr. Swackhammer from Space Jam supposed to be based off Jerry Krause, and that made me laugh really hard. But I think that we have to pay attention to one thing specifically. I'm not saying that Jerry Krause was the reason that, you know, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and those teams were great, but there were 6 constants throughout that entire run. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, Jerry Reinsdorf, Jerry Krause, Tex Winters, the only 6 that were constant throughout every championship team. So while, yeah, there was obviously some tension between ownership and front office and the players and Phil and everything, I think that we do need to give Jerry Krause his credit where it's due, even though had he not, you know, come into 98 saying this is going to be Phil's last year, maybe we get another title run in 99. Maybe we even get a mashup of Shaq and Kobe against the Bulls in 99. We don't know. But I think that in terms of Jerry Krause not getting the credit he deserves, he definitely deserves more of it. But I think it was pointed out very well that he was desperate to get more credit, which when you have Michael Jordan, that's hard to do.
Well, and that's a great take, by the way. I think we got to give credit and blame. So, like, I'm going to give Krause credit for building a dynasty aggressively, and then Krause takes the blame for tearing it apart aggressively. And you can look at the beginning, to your points, and thanks for the call. When you look at the acquisition of Scottie Pippen, that took a big trade. And if you're a Seattle Supersonics fan at the time, you're thinking about it. Now, you know, you look back at that. If you look back at the whole trajectory of the franchise in that moment, what's that mean? Plus, aggressive trades to go out and get the Horace Grants of the world that they needed. Aggressive trades to go out and trading Charles Oakley was documented in this as an aggressive move. So you can look across the plane and say, hey, it was aggressiveness that helped build the Bulls dynasty, but it's also ego that helped rip it apart. Got one tweet here that said, best line of both episodes, please send more stamps. Love that take as Michael Jordan wrote back to his mom and asked for stamps. It just shows you how far Michael Jordan came in it. Ray in Florida, what was your reaction to Last Dance?
Hi, Jason. Great job. Very, very, very entertaining. But so what I found most entertaining, and I don't think it matters what demographic of fan you were back then, and it's only been, what, 24 years? But the most entertaining, the most enjoyable thing, the most emotional thing for me was examining the actual true relationships that existed between whether it be players like Rodman and Jordan, who never spoke. We're finding out. I mean, that's to me personally so shocking. Now it's so shocking because we're believing during that time period that certain norms existed, and we attach it. And again, I say it doesn't really matter what demographic or how old you are, but back then, that seeing it now, it's like, wow, what a change. How unbelievable. I mean, we can start to talk about fault and things like that that aren't, well, that's the wrong word. We can start to talk about what brought success in a very intelligent way, but we do so now knowing the dynamics of some of these relationships were so, so different than us, the fan, again, regardless of demographic or even background necessarily. I'm a former jock. Wow, that's really the way it was. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, Ray, and thanks for your take. I mean, I think that's the part. And again, I'll go back to, we knew, I think all of us watching back at the time knew that it was dysfunctional. But when you see it and you hear the way that the players were speaking to the management, it showed you how dysfunctional it was. And just the overall, just it felt awkward, and everything about it felt awkward and tense. And imagine winning to that level in that level of tension, and you know, trying to figure out the line between respecting the players and their worth to it all, but also if you're Jerry Krause, feeling like you're getting enough credit for all of it, and how much credit and the need for credit sort of changed everything. And Stephen A. said, I think it was Stephen A. today, said on First Take, you know, at one point, hey, how's that rebuilding working for you? You know, the want to move away to start to rebuild is something that I think Bulls fans will always look back at that and say, why not get one more year out of it? 888, say ESPN, 888-729-3776. We're going to keep taking your reaction to The Last Dance. But when we come back, we're going to continue the NFL draft discussion. Mel Kiper joined First Take, had plenty to say about the draft just a couple of days away. You'll hear from him next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you guys, what's your reaction to The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2? You can give us your reactions, your take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Raul from New Orleans, buddy, what was your take on The Last Dance last night?
Hey, man, I thought the last two episodes, the first two episodes, were a great introduction to the series. I think it really shows true competitiveness and fireness of Michael Jordan, and it basically breaks down the whole Scottie Pippen saga. I thought it was just a refreshing watch.
between all the things going on in the world today, and I really look forward to more episodes.
Oh, thanks for your take on it. I think you're absolutely right, too. Like, we were all – I'm interested to see what the ratings were because it felt like the world was watching. If you missed the first hour of today's show, go check it out. It's on demand in the First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One. And a member FDIC. The other thing that has a captive audience would be the NFL draft. Just a couple of days away, Mel Kiper joined First Take, talked about the Wonderlic scores and said they'll have zero effect on Tua Tagovailoa's draft stock.
Mel, Tua, the Wonderlic scores were released. Tua scored a 19, which is considered low. Mm-hmm. Richard Sherman's tweeted about it like, LOL, yeah. If people really knew how this worked, no one cares. Nevertheless, Brady had a 33, and even Peyton Manning, who didn't have such a high score, I think was in the mid-high 20s. What does this mean for Tua's draft stock?
Nothing. Zero. Because I can give you about 10 names of guys that are Hall of Famers and Pro Bowlers and greatest of all time that had a score right around. Patrick Mahomes was with 24. So to me, you look at Brett Favre, look at Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, the list goes on and on of guys. And I can give you guys that had great scores that were complete busts in the NFL in the first round. So it's the way you read and see the field and the decisions you make and all that on the football field is important. More important than anything Wonderlic-wise. Look at Lamar Jackson. He's taking the league by storm. You know, he had a lower score than what they say you know, Tua did. So to me, it's nothing. It's about durability. It's not necessarily it's the hip and will he be able to stay healthy. It has nothing to do with the Wonderlic as the, if, in fact, he does get past that 5th, 6th pick and gets into the middle of the first round, like some have suggested.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. This is a reminder that it's time for certain things to be updated. I mean, there's been a real conversation about why we do 40-yard dashes for different positions and does it really matter and what's the point and purpose of so many combine drills? Well, As you just heard from Mel Kiper, who's more plugged in than most when it comes to the draft, Wonderlic has no value. So why do it? Why are we doing something that has absolutely no value in judging quarterbacks? And all of this comes back to a bigger issue here, which is right now I feel like we are getting a massive amount of misinformation on Tua Tagovailoa. And all that does, all the negative news does, is make me think more that he's going to go high. Now, I'll admit last year I sat there and said, Daniel Jones, no way he's going that high to the Giants. It just won't happen. And, you know, the reaction to his pick in the first round of the draft actually became one of the viral sensations from our draft broadcast last year as Mina Kimes essentially collapsed in the moment of it. Look, we all saw it. We all remember it. We all talk about it. I understand that there are variables in the draft and sometimes this misinformation is real. But when it comes to Tua, this is all about health. And if you're comfortable with health, somebody's going to take him incredibly high. Any presumption that he drops to me makes zero sense. Through it all, when you have a quarterback that can play as well as he can play, it only takes one team deciding that his hip is worth the risk. It takes one team talking to team doctors from the Titans that have examined him. It takes one team looking at it and saying, I'm going to do that. And we all know that that team is going to jump ahead of the Dolphins because they don't want to give the Dolphins the choice. If you're interested in Tua Tagovailoa, frankly, for me, I'd be stunned if Tua makes it to the 5th overall pick in the draft. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Obviously, don't forget, you can check out the NFL draft here on ESPN. We'll be doing a broadcast with the NFL Network. Trey Wingo will be leading that ship, and you don't want to miss it. Going to be great coverage coming through. If there's anything we learned from The Last Dance, it's sometimes just watching things about sports give us the normalcy we're craving so much. So we're going to keep that draft conversation going because QB continued, took a look at the Carolina Panthers. We're going to dive into that plus more Last Dance reaction. That's all coming up next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News.